Welcome back, everybody. This is Mark Steiner right here on The Mark Steiner Show and your source for cool jazz and more. WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And on our way to this conversation, I want to remind you The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. Remember, it's not just a bank, it's a credit union. It belongs to you and money comes back in the end. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information at www.mecu.com or at steinershow.org is MeQ, Baltimore Credit Union's banner. Now, folks, we're going to start a new segment here on the Mark Steiner Show. We're always coming up with some new stuff, and we need to bringing in the next generation of hosts and thinkers to take on the Mark Steiner Show and to sit in this mic as well on certain days. And you have heard her on the show numerous times before as a commentator, as one of our thinkers on race and gender and the political and cultural life of our community here in Baltimore and the country. Kalima Young, who teaches at Towson University, the University of Maryland College Park, where she's working on her PhD in American Studies, and who I first met in 1993 when she was graduating high school and was part of the Class of 93 series we did on my program way back then of four young people from the community here, all African-American, who won merit scholarships in that year. And we explored how, what their lives were like. And we have maintained this relationship ever since. And now Kalima is here in the studio helping us host this program. Kalima, good to have you here.
Oh, it's so great to be here, Mark. Always,
good.
always.
And also in the studio is another old friend of mine, Eddie Conway. Eddie Conway, is, and he is now the executive producer at Real News Network. And, of course, we all know what he did the years he spent in prison as a Black Panther and a leader. He has now produced this incredible new documentary that we'll be talking about in the second half an hour of our program called X, The Final Years, looking at the life of Malcolm X in a very different way. And I think it only in a way that somebody like Eddie Conway could look at it. And Eddie, good to have you in the studio, brother.
Okay,
always.
Thanks for having me.
But Kalima, you had a very – and folks, join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talkatsteinershow.org to email. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner. Go to our Facebook pages. But do join in. I want to know what you all think about – where this presidential election is at the moment. The question of Bernie Sanders and the Black community, the question of, well, Bernie Sanders should get out of the race, the question of Hillary Clinton's appeal to so many older people, especially in communities of color in this country, and what all this means politically and that what we see as a divide and where this may take us, and could it take us to a President Trump? Have mercy.
Oh, man.
410-319-8888.
Don't even say President Trump. Don't do that. Oh, man.
Wait, it's crazy.
I know. It's insane. And I think one of the things that this is illustrating is that there's been a serious division within what would be considered the Democratic Party that Bernie Sanders is speaking to. Mm-hmm. But he's not doing anything that's new. He is basically a New Deal Democrat. He's basically a New Deal Democrat, but the fact that that is seen as so progressive really illustrates how far the right has become.
Yes.
You know?
I mean, and also that, you know, that he's – well, first of all, I can't – there's not been a candidate in the history of my growing up in this country and watching, at least not establishing candidates, who have used the word socialism. Which has kind of changed the...
Yeah. But to me, when I think about socialism, I feel like the socialism that people say that they're getting isn't actually socialism. It's really just the same sort of democratic principles that we've lost in the last 45 years as we've moved into like neoliberal politics, as we've made... as we've privatized things, as we have stripped public services from communities, as we've shifted the wealth to 1%. But even those policies that people are saying are socialist policies were unevenly applied. If we think about them as New Deal policies from, you know, back in the day, they were still unevenly applied. So I just can't see myself calling Bernie a socialist at this point, because my understanding of socialism is maybe a different animal. I don't know what.
I'm not sure. How we define that word anymore, but I can take a stab at that, and I'll tell you in a minute why I would call Bernie let him call himself a socialist.
All right, give me that.
You want to give me that before? I want to see what Eddie has to think about that too. But I mean,
what is a socialist at this moment?
Let me start this way. I just finished reading this book. You'll hear an interview coming up on Friday on the show with Manisha Sinha. And Manisha Sinha just wrote this book, The Slave's Cause, A History of Abolition.
Mm-hmm.
It is, to me, one of the most dynamic, thorough books I've ever read about the abolitionist movement. She takes from the 1700s all the way to the Civil War and beyond a little bit, but all the way to the Civil War, and shows about how this movement was in different waves and how it was a movement that was actually connected, that was actually in many ways not led by white people but led by black folks and was a really interracial movement. And but she also talked about the schisms inside the movement that divided it. And one of the schisms happened around – I just love this book. I just think it's – because it's such an intimate book and she brings this personal narrative into it. You meet – you actually get to know the people who were in that movement and what the dynamic was. She's really, really just 10 years of research went into this book. At any rate, one of the things in that that struck me was that the abolitionists wrestling with should they support and how they supported the New Republican Party in 1856 that did not want to come out directly and say we should abolish slavery, because they had these people saying we should abolish slavery gradually. Most of the abolitionists saying, no, 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 we need to abolish this tomorrow morning, tonight, by 6 p.m. It's got to be over. So but most of them decided, even the most radicals like William Lloyd Garrison, while Frederick Douglass really wanted to support the Republicans and he did more, William Lloyd Garrison was...
And you should make a point that the Republican Party at that time was the party of Lincoln.
It was the party of Lincoln. Right,
yes.
Right.
Okay.
And Lincoln had to be kind of pulled into the ending slavery thing as well. They wanted to stop slavery from moving into other... They wanted to restrict slavery, right, and end the Fugitive Slave Act, but they weren't about abolishing slavery. At any rate, Frederick Douglass decided he was going to support the Republican Party. William Lloyd Garrison said, no, the Constitution is a slave document and I'm not supporting them, but ended up supporting them in his writing anyway. So what I'm saying to say that is that it's a when you look back at history, the complexity of the dynamics, do people say, no, we got to do it from the outside, or people say, no, we have to do it from the inside.
Right.
When you look at history, you realize that the dynamic from both energies is what ultimately changed society, not just one of them.
Right.
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 And we see ourselves always divided in these different places, but actually that social dynamic is, that political dynamic is one that really is going to – what we're watching now is a dynamic that people can look back on and see this was a – this is one of the – we are in one of those moments that I think we critical – the beginning of critical changes are taking place that I think we don't even see because you get stuck in the partisan politics of Democrats, Republicans, or Trump, or Clinton, and all the rest. That's just what I was going to throw out there.
Okay, well, I guess back to the original question. The bottom line for what socialism is that the masses, the people of the particular community or nation owning the means of production, owning and sharing the products of that means of production and the products of their labor. I mean, that's the baseline of it, right?
We're bringing home
whether or not Bernie is a socialist or not, I don't think that's, for me, that's not the issue. What's the issue is that the discussion has taken place and is taking place and it will continue to take place. And as you said, up until this, or somebody just said, up until this point, that discussion wasn't on the table.
Right.
Occupy Wall Street brought it on the table with the 1%. The Black Panther brought it on the table with the need for us to control our own destiny. So that discussion's been out there, but now it's in the national lexicon. It's there for dialogue, for people. We can see that 1%. The whole issue of class have always been there. There's never been a real serious discussion about it. It needs to be. Yes, Sanders is advocating New Deal kind
right.
of proposals. Mm-hmm. We need those proposals because you don't go from a totally multinational corporate fascist capitalist state to socialism overnight.
Nope.
You're going to have to take control in the means of production. You're going to take control in your community. You're going to have to have survival pending change. That's what the Black Panther Party was saying 50 years ago. That's what we need, survival pending revolution more now than ever before, right?
Mm.
So we need to kind of like look at those programs and talk about those programs, but not talk about them in terms of the limitation of who's controlling the empire, but talk about them in terms of building a movement to go into the future so we can control our lives and the planet.
Mm-hmm. Limo, what do you think about this back and forth we just had?
No, I think both of you are spot on, like completely spot on. There are two words that, you know, that stuck out for me from both of your discussions. The one word is the conversation of the masses, right, as the basis of socialism. The masses understanding the means of having control of the means of production, and this conversation of what an outsider status looks like. Right. And I feel like these narratives are the things that need to get complicated in our conversation, because if socialism really is about the masses of people owning the means of production, then that means you have to have a racial analysis of what the masses looks like. Right. And how the economic system is built off of the creation of races of people that we can have in a hierarchy. And the fact that at times when people who are talking about progressive politics, the Bernies are talking about these things, and they cannot have and engage a real sustainable conversation about how the masses and race are one and the same and are part of this sort of economic system, that is when you start losing the people that could potentially be your supporters. And one of my critiques has been this conversation about, well, how come some people are not hearing or feeling what Bernie is talking about, or how come they don't see where this racialized, his ability to have a racialized sort of critique of capitalism, that suddenly if we have only an economic shift, it raises all boats, but still systemic racism exists. And I think that that's that conversation of the masses that I'm always trying to trouble, because the capitalism is built off of racism and the creation of races and masses of people that can be controlled and made to give all of their labor power away.
No, that's important. I'm going to have a question about that, but folks, join us here, 410-319-8888. You've heard now these thoughts from Eddie Conway and Kalima Young. What are your thoughts? I want to hear you join us here at 410-319-8888. How does it affect who you might think about supporting, not supporting this election, and why you might not do that? 410-319-8888. Write to us here by email, talk@steinershow.org. Tweet us at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. I want to hear from you. So how does that play out then? Mm-hmm. In the intra-politics within the black world, for example, you say the same about almost any world, Mexican world, lots of different worlds in America, right? But what I mean by that is that Hillary Clinton gets in most places, except it happened in Michigan differently, in Wisconsin differently, the lion's share of the African-American vote. Mm-hmm. Bernie may get a higher percentage of the younger African-American vote, mm-hmm, in some communities. But, you know, in some ways, this has been a really strange shift in America. After the Civil Rights Movement and after the Panthers and the push that was made, since the early 70s, the Democratic Party has become the home of women, mm-hmm, African-American communities, mm-hmm, the various Latino communities, mm-hmm, gay and lesbian communities, as places where people felt they had a voice and a semblance of political power inside that structure. And Hillary, as a woman, and as somebody who, because of a relation with her husband, also had this kind of strange relationship with the black community, but had one, represents that in some way, right? And so there's a complexity there inside the pool about which way to go. Mm-hmm. How does that parse out for you all?
Oh, why'd you point at me, Eddie? Don't do that.
We want to know your thinking.
Oh, my goodness. I'm still figuring out my thinking, y'all. How does that play out? I think it plays out in a way that people have a lazy understanding of who their allies are. You know? Because the Democratic Party has herald itself as like the space of progressive or the space of the masses, it's been a very convenient area for people to say, all right, this is where I'm going to align my politics. But they can only align their politics so far if they they can only align their politics so far and have to be willing to not critique capitalism, right? For any of these people to say that this is my party of choice, you have to be willing to not critique capitalism. And that is one of the things that I feel like a lot of progressive movements have done, right? In this bid to, I guess, in, when we're talking in sort of the world of queer studies, in this bid for homonormativity, to be a part of the normative masses, that means you can have to be the most productive member of society. So gays and lesbians, we're really productive. So yes, we're going to be the best citizens we could possibly be. Black folks, we're going to be the best citizens we can possibly be without actually critiquing what citizenship is, what these parties are actually doing to sort of reify capitalism and reify these systems and hierarchies that don't necessarily serve.
Well, you think part of it might be, but part of it might be, that's a really interesting analysis. I think a very powerful analysis. Okay. But within that, part of it could be that as you read history, that large portions of disenfranchised communities don't really care about capitalism or socialism. Mm-hmm. They want to be part of the system. Mm-hmm. They want a piece of the pie. And demand a piece of the pie. So demanding a piece of the pie means you got to be part of the establishment to get a piece of the pie, mm-hmm. as opposed to trying to figure out another way to create a new society. You know what I'm saying? Isn't that part of the tension?
Well, the tension is directly related to who's controlling the thought process, the political activities in any of those communities, whether it's like the gender community, whether it's the Latino community, whether it's the Black community. And so every community has a group of people that controls mm-hmm. the direction, the thinking, the politics of that community. In the Black community, say in particular, it's the church, it's the petty bourgeoisie, if for my terminology. It's those people that has gained, you know, somewhere along the line, people say, oh, it's a 10%, it's the talented 10th, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera. It is those people that determine where the rest of the population goes in terms of the vote. It is those people, established people in the gay community mm-hmm. that's for the civil marriages, for those kind of things. Inclusiveness is those people in the Latino community, not the immigrants down in the fields, mm-hmm. not the people down in the ghetto, not the people that's being abused and attacked when they walk the street at night. It is those people that's part of the capitalist establishment that makes that determination. But if those groups, if all of those groups could establish a third party, they should establish a third party, mm-hmm. a third party that will act in their particular interest, because the Democratic Party has moved so far to the right that it's out. It looks worse than Ronald Reagan. I mean, it's making Ronald Reagan look kind of good.
What?
You know, and so that's a problem when you have to trail behind somebody else's wagon and only a small percentage of your population is getting benefits from it, and it's in their interest to keep you motivated, you need to change your course. I think Malcolm X and a lot of other people were saying, we need to establish our own stuff. And I'm talking all of those quote-unquote out-groups need to come together and form a third party. The problem is, in America, the two major parties always kill a third party.
Oh, yeah.
But we have to find a way on the ground, from the grassroots up, to build such a party and build it so it speaks of our interests.
We just lost our callers. Where'd they go? Call back. Just hung up at one time.
It was probably me.
410-319-8888. It's about to go to your calls. 410-319-8888. Come on back here and give us your thoughts. Right to us here at talkatcentershot.org. 410-319-8888. What were we going to say?
Oh, I was just going to sort of co-sign your analysis. It's kind of like when I'm having a conversation with other womanist, feminist women, and people bring in this concept of leaning in, right? Leaning into the corporate system, leaning in politics, this idea of feminism and like getting the executive job and addressing these particular systems, as opposed to it being about revolution and tearing down those those systems that necessarily do not serve all women. I don't want to lean into a system that is designed to oppress people. And the Democratic Party and the Republican Party are supporting systems that are designed to maintain hierarchies and to maintain an oppressive group of groups of people that can be oppressed. So I'm all about shaking up the convention. I'm all about adding these conversations to the mix, but I am also all about people pushing for another way, visioning what a new system could look like that isn't this particular two-party system that lives on the backs of a flawed economic system that's not designed to serve people.
But when you have an election like you do in 2016, when for most people you look at this election and you see a Donald Trump who is probably going to be the Republican nominee, mm-hmm. who has just made these lynch mob-like rants attacking black people and the people who come in to protest,
mm-hmm.
His misogynist, racist rhetoric,
mm-hmm.
And the rest, people, that is a terrifying thing for people to watch.
Oh, yeah.
And it's difficult to build something saying in terms of a party on the outside at a moment when most people go, we can't let him become president of the United States of America. So Hillary comes in, she'll probably get us into deeper wars across the globe, without a doubt. But then people have to weigh that against looking right. at this, this reality TV show star who's had nothing but failed businesses and makes all his right. money by selling his name across the globe.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Who won't release any of his tax forms because it'll show who he really is. I mean, and so that's part of the problem at the moment.
Yeah. The urgency of defeating the obvious foe. But the obvious foe is much larger than this one horrible, ugly figurehead. You know? So how do you defeat that system? I don't have any special solutions.
I go back. I go back to like the 1850s, and I think about the four parties that ran in the 1860 election, and Lincoln won with a minority of the vote. Right, mm-hmm. He just took 38% of the vote or whatever it was, and he became president of the United States because there were four parties running, and people like the Liberty Party, which was the third most, which was a outside party, which is a radical party, saying ending slavery now, supporting John Brown and all the rest. Which is where for a while Frederick Douglass went, and he was part of that party. They ended up back in the Republican Party
right.
because they were terrified of the out-and-out racists taking over. I'm saying it's always, that complexity yeah. always exists
exactly.
you know, inside of all this.
And I think it's important that we're having these conversations because they're generative. And I think it's very generative for the Democratic Convention in Philadelphia to have a faction of the party that is actually questioning
yes.
the systems so that certain things can be put in place and a new dialogue can begin. I think, you know, it's like Anna Zing has this idea.
Who?
Anna Zing, she's an ethnographer
okay.
who does environmental politics. She has this thing. One stick alone is just a stick. Two sticks rubbing together produce heat and light. In friction, you have generative and productive space. You have new ways that allies learn to work with one another, new ways to formulate discourse and policies that we didn't even configure. So I think it's really important to keep having these generative conversations and have these moments where we are focusing on the intra-politics because it'll only make the system that's created stronger, if that's a two-party or a third-party or a three-party.
We have to take a short break. We're going to come right back. And Frederick, you are going to be the first caller up as soon as we come back from this quick break. And we're also going to talk about Eddie Conway's new film on the Black Panther Party, which is showing tomorrow night at the Real News.
Malcolm X.
What did I say?
Black Panther Party.
Did I say Black Panther? I meant
yes.
Malcolm X. I'm
yes,
sorry, man.
Yes, please.
I'm
he,
sorry.
He predates the Black
yes,
Panther Party.
I apologize.
All right.
X, okay. The final years.
Yes.
Sorry about that, brother.
Yes.
We're going to come right back, and both Lou and Frederick are going to get on the air as soon as we come back. Stay with us. Don't go away. Welcome back, everybody. This is Mark Steiner here with Liamy Young and Eddie Conway, and also joining us now for part of this conversation, we should talk about the film coming up. Akeem Jackson's with us, who's events coordinator, The Real News. Akeem, good to see you. Good to have you in the studio.
Hello.
We're going to go right to the phones, though, at 410-319-8888. And Frederick in Baltimore, you're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you very much. I grew up in West Baltimore and left in 1951 to a career and returned in 86. And I'm concerned about West Baltimore problems, which were not nearly as bad then as they appear to be now.
Right.
What I want to, I love your talk, the excellent, you're getting close. I think the problem, in my analysis, is that we refer to Mark Twain's attribution that the trouble ain't what people don't know, it's what they know that ain't so. And unfortunately,
right.
Unfortunately, most of what we learn ain't so. Mm. And not only is it not so in an operational way, some of our economy, much of our economy, is built on that on the misinterpretations or misguided applications. So it isn't a question of who's in charge so much as it is the how do we operate a democracy. We need knowledgeable people, and if we don't have that awareness, the system that we have built actually subverts itself. So that I've been an activist since I was in high school in the 40s, and I examined so many things. You simply cannot fix the problem that we have. The problem of race is a problem of existence, more so than simply the matter of black and white or shadings of color.
Right.
And I wanted to encourage you, but you really have to open up the dialogue. And I'm doing that. I mean, I'm working on it. That's what I have in mind. Ways of doing that, and I would very much like to talk with, for example, the participants there and you have now, to explore it. People who have experience and who have seen and have tried so hard and spent their lives doing it, and we need to back off so that, for example, we blame capitalism as a problem. I think not capitalism, it's our lack of knowledge of how the world works, so that you can take any system as communists and socialists and others have done and distort it by lack of beliefs anyway. But that's why I think you need to do more, and we need to look more into what ain't so that we are working on. And I thank you very much for your discussion.
Frederick, I appreciate the call. And I think things are, at least for me in my old age, have gotten more complicated than just socialist and capitalist. I think things are much more complex than that.
Definitely.
As humankind is more complex than that. And I think that we've reached a point in our world where, you know, many of us know what is wrong with what we see. Mm-hmm. But I don't think many of us really know or even think that it can kind of figure out what replaces it and change it. We may change it, but what replaces it?
Right.
What is something new? What does that new system look like? I think that we don't know that.
And that's the great lie of capitalism and all these things. The lie is that this is, if left to our own devices, this is how we would organize ourselves. This is how humans would interact. That's a lie. We have to figure out a way to think larger and bigger and less in a way that sustains the oppression of other people and hierarchies around people.
And even though we don't know where we will go in the future, I mean, that slogan, another world is possible, is being played out a lot of times in Greece, say, down on the ground with their cooperatives, their networks, because of the poverty that's been presented to them from the fleecing of the multinational banks with the tracker and whatnot. They have formed cooperatives. They have formed support networks. They have formed ways in which to survive, in Greece, in Spain, in Venezuela, in other places. So we see it's another arrangement is possible, you know. But most likely the multinational capitalists continue to blockade or try to strangle or stamp those particular examples out. But those examples exist already. Those examples exist in Canada to protect the land, to protect the resources. Those examples exist in, say, Brazil, et cetera. But anyway, yes, I get off the subject. Go ahead.
No, you're not getting off. We're going to have a caller here. I'm going to bring Akeem and start talking about this documentary.
Okay, yes, we do want to do that.
410-319-8888 is the number here. But so let's talk a bit about this film and what you are presenting, what you're going to be presenting tomorrow night.
Okay, well, I want to start so we'll at least get the basis of it in. Tomorrow night down at the Real News, that's 231 North Holiday Street, we're having a film that we produced about a year ago on Malcolm X's final year. We decided we wanted to look at how he, after he left the Nation of Islam and went around the world, how he developed, how he formed his thinking. And what we did was, instead of speculating and reading books, we went and found people that lived with him that last year. We found organizers that worked with him, the organizer of the OAU. We found people that walked with him across the planet, and we talked to them. We found sisters and brothers and white people and black people, et cetera, and we filmed them and we interviewed them and we put it out there. And we're going to present that tomorrow night at 6:30, and then after that we're going to have a panel. I'm going to host a panel. We got two sisters, two brothers, some young, some old. I guess I'll be the old person there. But we're going to have a lively discussion after that, so I'm encouraging everybody to come down to the Real News Studio and take advantage of this so that we can do more of this kind of activity.
You want to add to that, Akeem?
And, yeah, just to let everyone know who's actually on the panel, it's going to be Kate Whitehead. She's an associate professor at Loyola University.
And a substitute host here on the Mark Steiner Show and co-host here on the show. Let me
add
that.
Yes. We have
one of our partners.
Dr. Don Wargs, he's also a professor at Towson University, and he teaches political science. We have Lawrence Grandpre, who's an assistant director at LBS, a community organization that I'm sure most people know here who listen, or what your listeners do. And there's Shalise Green. She's a community organizer and the founder of the Be the Village Initiative, and it's just an action project that involves the empowerment of black people. So I think it's an interesting cast of people who all have their diverse narrative on his story.
Awesome. And I'm going to say I watched the film this morning, and it is an amazing half an hour worth being seen. It's so much dialogue and sound. I said, we should just air it on the radio for people to hear.
Yes, check with Paul J.
No, it's really well done. And I think that
go ahead. I didn't mean to do that
yes,
to you.
Yes, but it really is well done. I mean, you have discovered in this film people who knew Malcolm, who were with him in the Organization of African American Unity, who were part of that struggle with him, who were with him just days before he passed, when he was assassinated, mm-hmm. I should say, and have some really remarkable things to say about their conversations with him before he died. I think it's one of the best things I've seen on Malcolm in a long time. So I do appreciate the work you put into this, Eddie, and what you are presenting to the public here. This is very important.
Okay, but we were a team.
No.
Remember that.
I know Eddie Conway. And I know that he would never say.
So modest.
He's such a modest cat. He's always say, no, it's not me. It's not me.
It's the Real News. Okay, but yes, we do want people to come out and see it.
And, you know, and the editing is great, so it's good to watch because our brother Bashi Rose just did an incredible job editing
this
film.
Yes.
So, and it's free.
And it's free.
Just come on in.
Wow.
Yes.
Awesome.
So let's try to get a couple calls in here before we have to roll out of here in about 10 minutes to talk about Real News. 410-319-8888. Wait a second. What is happening here?
What is going on here?
Hold up.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, What's your name again, dude?
Happy birthday to you.
Valerie's going to say my birthday's present coming, and Bob Wisdom walks through. I thought you were supposed to be Morocco.
Hey, brother, I came back for you. I only went there because I could come through Baltimore.
Damn.
Hey, bro.
What's going on, man?
Hey, man, it's you.
Good Lord, brother, birthday. Love you. Good to see you.
Hey.
I can't believe Bob Wisdom just walked through the door. Valerie kept saying, my birthday, I got you a birthday present, but it's not. It's not here yet.
Well, it's here.
It's here. Your brother is here. Bob Wisdom is one of my closest friends in life. Bob Wisdom, as you all know, from The Wire, where he played Bunny Colvin. Was that right?
Yeah, Bunny.
The man who created Amsterdam. Besides that, Bob Wisdom is one of the most deeply political, spiritual intellectuals I know on the planet Earth.
Oh, man, come on.
You are, man. The stuff you put together, just, you know, and being the priest you are and everything else that you are, man, and bringing joy and dance into the world and understand your politics and revolution, my brother.
Hey, my brother.
Brother Mark is here.
What?
Tell us how you met.
Bob Wisdom and I met. Okay, baby. My wife is here.
Hey, he ain't nothing without her.
I met Bob Wisdom at Studio Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And we were studying acting together back in the 80s.
Right.
Good Lord, it's a long time ago.
I know, bro. I know. Seemed like yesterday.
And we did that play together.
We did it. American Buffalo.
American Buffalo and blew them away.
And blew them away. And we are due to do something again.
We are due to do something again, man. You played Teach and I played the little fat man.
Donnie.
So I had to remember fat man for a few hours there.
Yeah, you played a good fat man, even though you're skinny. I remember you were skinny.
I was skinny. I was a skinny fat man. Brother, it was so good to see you.
Hey, man. No, Val called me. Hey, she's amazing, bro.
She is amazing, man. She is amazing.
And she phoned a couple of weeks ago and said, "Is Mark 70th? I said, no. That snuck up on us. And she said, if you're going to be in the area, you know, we're going to have a little. And I said, all right, let me figure. Then this whole Morocco thing, I looked at the dates, blah, blah, blah. So I said, well, I'm going to come back through Baltimore. So I told her, let's do this, you know. And she kept the secret the whole time.
She
man.
Did keep that secret. Because I talked, they knew? The producers knew?
Yes, we knew.
Yes,
everybody knew.
Except you. So that was a good secret.
Who knew? Ag knew.
I didn't know, Mark.
And you know, we talked about you yesterday on the program.
Is that right?
Yeah, we had this brother here from Britain who was this British-Palestinian guy, Kareem Salema, who did this incredible oud work. And I talked about the Gnawa people in Morocco, who you were very close to.
Right.
And mentioned your name and talked about their music and culture. He's sort of riffing on that.
Oh, my goodness.
Because he understood the culture and the music.
Right.
And we brought you up on the air, started talking about the stuff that you were there right now. I said performing and on stage with these brothers from Morocco.
See, that was all deliberate. I put on.
Huh?
Pain them
too.
Right.
We faked you out, man.
You did. Completely. I was just like, what?
I didn't post anything yesterday because I didn't want any locations to show up. So I said, mark my check. So I was like, you know, my Facebook Jones, man, was hurting me.
You do have a Facebook Jones.
I do, bro. You know, it's my newspaper. What can I say?
Why did I get the chance?
Oh, man, it's good to see you, bro.
Oh, it's so good to see you, man.
Yeah. I'm sweating. This, so I'm like,
me too, man. I'm not ready for this. Let's all sit here taking pictures.
Well, I'm with you, Mark. I didn't know.
You didn't know that? Thank you, team. Well, I say this has been one of the best birthday celebrations I've had in my entire life. These last few days, all the things that Valerie's put on, our parties and stuff we had here at the station, and being here at WEAA, which is one of the only places I've ever been on air before, is like a family.
Mm.
And a lot of love we got through this place. And so this is, and then just all of it together has been an amazing birthday, 70.
Yeah,
and my dear brother walking through the studio.
I just want to see that face and hear the laugh, man, up front. You know, I tune in early in the morning because on L.A. it's like 7 o'clock in the morning, y'all.
Right.
You know, so I gotta, you know, set my alarm and tune in. But it's nice to see being in the studio and see what it's all about, you know. WEAA. Yeah.
Man.
Yeah, Mark Steiner.
So I want to hear all about this Morocco trip. That must have been
Well, it was. This year was strange and profound in a strange way because last year one of my teachers passed away, Mark Mugenia, and he was like the buddy. He was like the you know, the blues master in Ganawa music, and everybody touched him. He was like the malam in this or the master in this town. So I was seeing him for years and years and learning, you know, the instruments and learning the songs and all that. And he passed away last year. So part of the reason I said I'd go this year because they're going to do a homage to him, you know. So I said I really want to be there for that. So jumped on a plane, and then Val, you know, hooked us up. And I was like, man, come on. So we've always been saying we're going to do this together.
Wow.
So we're going to do this, but I think we might hit that Cupid thing, too. So,
yeah, we got to talk about
yeah,
yes.
We got to do that, too.
Cause that's so Bob took his orishas in Santeria in Santiago de Cuba many years ago.
Yeah, that was about 35 years now.
Right.
Connected with Cuba. So, you know, that would be great for us to experience together. You know, we have that age now where we can do that. They got the signal going?
Yes.
I see you later. What are they doing this?
The real people that's in charge.
Right.
They try to tell us who head on.
Right.
Well, I already did the MeQ thing. Didn't I do MeQ? I did my underwriting. I did that.
Did it again.
Huh? I just did it again. I did it earlier. Life is short, but this is good.
I'll just be here hanging out.
No, so we got to send this over to the city paper, and my producer sent me out of Vronis, and I'm going to hang out with my brother Bob Wisdom and Eddie Conway and Kalima Young. Thank you so much for being of our weekly series. Good to have you here in the studio, sister.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.